You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Coming up on the SBS On The Money podcast, NAB, the latest to cut jobs, the market still betting on US interest rate cuts, and how much money do you need in your superannuation for a comfy retirement? All of that and more next. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Wednesday, the 10th of September, 2025. It's a day where the Australian share market rose by about a third of a percent. We'll have the details with Marcus Bogdan from Blackmore Capital in a few moments, including what he's telling his clients. But first to superannuation. And if you're retiring right now for a comfortable retirement, couples would need around $690,000 in super, singles about $595,000. That's a bit more than previous. And that's according to new research from the Association of Superannuation of Australia. For more, Stephanie Youssef spoke with ASFA CEO Mary Delahunty.
What does a comfortable retirement mean, and how does that differ to a modest lifestyle?
So at ASFA, we've done a retirement standard for those two events. A comfortable retirement is a retirement where you might take one overseas trip every few years, some domestic travel probably every year, you eat out a little bit, you've got private health cover. A modest retirement is a step down from that lifestyle. Probably not a lot of overseas travel at all, probably not private health cover, and you're not eating out that much. So it's catering for a budget where there's less disposable income.
How much do people need for a comfortable retirement and why?
For couples retiring around about at age 65 now, the ASFA standard has just been updated to reflect that a comfortable retirement will now look around like needing $75,319 per year for a couple, and for a single around $53,289. So those kind of components are made up of budgets where we've used the ABS spending data, and they reflect the way retirees and pre-retirees are living. So they give a good snapshot of what you might need to plan for when you're looking at retiring.
And how does that compare historically?
It's gone up again this quarter. Some of the components of the budget that are making retirement spending go up include private health cover, which we've seen rise fairly astronomically year on year, and it's had its biggest jump this quarter since 2018. But we've also adjusted the comfortable lifestyle this quarter to take into account spending on digital items like streaming services, good mobile phones, good NBN packages, because the retirees retiring now, that's what they expect of their life.
But people that are retiring now, how many of them do you think are retiring comfortably?
Around 35% of the retirees retiring now are able to afford that comfortable lifestyle, and a further 30% can be found at that modest lifestyle level.
What about those in their working years now? How are they generally set up for a comfortable retirement?
Well, for the first time, we can now say that an average 30-year-old working throughout their life, being able to rely on that 12% superannuation guarantee contribution, is set up for a comfortable retirement. Now, that is quite an average account. It means that there'll be differences for people, but it is a really significant milestone for the superannuation system because it's finally reaching its full blossoming.
And how about those that are more closer towards retirement? Maybe they might be about 10 or 20 years off retirement. What are some things that they can do to ensure that they might have a comfortable retirement?
One of the greatest actions you can take to ensure that you've got a comfortable or even a modest lifestyle in retirement is to engage with your superannuation balance early. Figure out how it is that you want to live in your life after work and whether or not the balance and the trajectory that you're on will support that. And think about the private savings and other means that you may have to support that as well. And then talk to someone who can help you. Often you can call your super fund, and at no extra cost, they can have conversations with you about making the most of your retirement savings.
Do you think the policies and settings are right at the moment to ensure people are retiring with enough money?
Superannuation has been an incredible achievement for policymakers, for Australians in general, but we can always improve it. And one of the things we're looking to improve right now is the settings around advice and the ability for people to be able to access more help and guidance on their super so that they can retire making good decisions.
And with the super guarantee rise ending, what's the message to the government?
We think the superannuation system is, in its entirety, a world-class system. And now it's time to get some other settings right so that everyone can take advantage of that world-class system. Advice is one of those settings that definitely needs to be addressed. Payday super, which means that you're getting your superannuation paid at the same time as your wage, another setting that needs to be addressed. All of this is on the government's agenda, and we look forward to working with them to get it done.
There's Stephanie Youssef there speaking with Mary Delahunty from ASFA. Let's take a closer look at the share market now. The S&P ASX 200 down a third of a percent to 8,830. 9 of 11 sectors ended higher. The best performing today, financial stocks. The worst, materials. And material companies really led the declines. The worst performers included lithium stocks like Liontown Resources and Pilbara Minerals. The best performers today include Clarity Pharmaceuticals and Judo Capital. For more on the day's market news, including NAB becoming the latest of the big banks to cut jobs, I spoke with Marcus Bogdan, the Chief Investment Officer at Blackmore Capital. Marcus, first of all, what's driving investor sentiment at the moment, and how much of it has to do with interest rates, given the potential narrowing of the interest rate differential between Australia and the US?
Well, we're still in a very much Goldilocks period for equity markets, and they're really keeping away the bad news for the moment. Sentiment, despite all of the issues around geopolitical issues, tariffs, and a slowing world economy, markets have been remarkably resilient. And in Australia, we have seen 3 years of declining profits. But despite that, valuations are at near record highs, both for the ASX and the US market. And a key driver of this has been the prospect of further rate cuts, both here and in the US. And that's continuing to elevate valuations despite a very slowing economy that we're seeing more broadly.
That speed of interest rate cuts, though, I think is greater in the US. I think it was ANZ today was saying that the Fed's on track to start delivering 125 basis points worth of cuts, though. But are investors concerned about the potential independence of the US Federal Reserve, given Donald Trump's move to sack a Fed Reserve governor in Lisa Cook, which has been temporarily blocked by a federal court judge there?
Oh, certainly there is growing concern around the independence of the Federal Reserve and the impact, whether it be the Trump administration jawboning the Federal Reserve to lower interest rates aggressively, or moving to change the composition of the federal governor's membership to align it more closely to what the Trump administration would like. So those concerns are very, very real, and potentially they could have an impact on markets going forward.
Can you get your take on China at the moment? Consumer prices there slid in August, down 0.4% from a year ago. What does it say about the Chinese economy, the implication for investors and for Australia, especially at a time where we're starting to see the iron ore price pick up again? I think it's back above 107 US.
In China, there's certainly evidence there of quite material deflationary pressures. There are still industries that are in oversupply, and that's broadly weakening prices. But there has been greater discipline shown by the Chinese authorities in reducing supply, particularly in areas of housing, automotive, and general industry. And particularly in the steel industry, that has been beneficial in terms of providing support for the underlying iron ore price. And so in recent months, we have actually started to see prices start to appreciate in iron ore as growth has continued to be stronger than expected from Chinese steel producers and also their exports.
I think one of the big corporate stories of the day, again, the banks NAB the latest to cut jobs, about 410. It follows a huge one from ANZ yesterday, 3,500. Both say they're not AI related and both use two similar words, simplification and to reduce duplication of jobs. Is the sector entering a job cutting cycle, and why are the banks doing this now?
I think what was most evident in the last reporting season that we saw in August was a broad discussion by a broad range of corporates around cost cutting, and particularly around looking at reducing labour force. And this has been particularly evident in companies that have exposure to the US. We saw it in Brambles, Amcor and CSL. But closer to home, we are now starting to see that in the banking sector. You've had ANZ, NAB and Westpac all announce pretty material cuts there. And I think the concern from them is that we're in a low growth environment. Costs for the banks are still elevated. I believe for CBA, costs were running at around 6% in the last financial year. And so that has been putting pressure on reducing the cost base for the banks. I think digitalization, AI are all playing a component of that. And also the banks are simplifying. They're offering fewer products and fewer services. They're closing more branches. And all of that is leading to pressure on the level of labour they have in their organisations.
What's the outlook then for the banking sector?
Well, I think the outlook is very much still the same. It's benign. They'll continue to grow in sort of a low single digit level. Bad and doubtful debts are still okay. And that's based on the fact that we've still got strong employment. And from the Royal Commission, they've been very careful in terms of who they've provided lending facilities to. But low growth, I think you asked, we'll continue to see competition around both deposits and on mortgages. One of the big beneficiaries that the banks have had in the last couple of years has been the increased use of buybacks. I think we're getting much closer to the end there. So a benign environment for the banks, but low growth, and valuations are at historically high levels.
And so finally, what are you telling your clients at the moment, and where do you see the opportunities for investors?
I think given what we've seen in equity markets, both the US and in Australia, and the large appreciation that we've had in prices generally since April, it would not be surprising to see a pause or a drop off in markets at these particular levels, particularly in Australia, where it's the valuations are just not matched by the earnings growth. The areas of interest are those areas that are not at their record high levels, but companies in industry leaders that are trading below their 5 and 10 year averages. There are examples in the industrial sector and the health sector where there's just, I think, more support around those sorts of prices. And the final element is that in a slowing global environment, I think balance sheet strength is also particularly important.
That's Marcus Bogdan there from Blackmore Capital. And he wraps up the podcast for this Wednesday. Don't forget, if you do enjoy it, to give it a like and a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and to click subscribe. See you tomorrow.
This SBS on the Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only and should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
This SBS on the Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. Content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.